To understand Dharma, you must practice. The first step is to learn how to practice, but just learning how won't lead to understanding. It's just knowing how. To go for a treasure hunt, first you must have a map, a compass, a means to travel. If you have all the tools and take no action, you'll be no closer to the treasure. Dharma is similar. Once you know how to practice, it's like having a map. You must develop yourself. If you are selfish, try to tame that. You must know how to properly practice generosity. You give to tame your selfishness. You share your excesses with others. Some people accumulate many things, like clothing. Some can go for an entire month without wearing the same set of clothes. If you have that many, you need wardrobes. I know a woman who has so much clothing that she needs to buy another house to live in. One house is for her residence and the other is for clothing storage. This is a lot of excess. Owning many houses is burdensome. Whatever is less burdensome is more comfortable. Observe yourself. One life partner is already tiresome enough. Acquire less. Be content with what you have. These qualities will make your life simple. If you're to trek a long distance, excess possessions won't get you far. There's a monk here who has been in monkhood for quite some time. I'm not gossiping, but I'm giving an example. He once wanted to go on a pilgrimage. So, he made a pact with another monkat, Tipprosit, who also wanted to go on a pilgrimage. They went to see their teacher about what stuff they had to bring. The teacher replied, "The essential eight. These eight essentials are the three robes, the food bowl, the water filter, cold, tamagalok. These are the really essential things. A needle and some threads to fix torn robes." After he got the answer that he just needed the eight essentials, he didn't believe it. He asked for many things from the temple storage, flashlight, spare batteries, and many other things. He took those because he thought these things would make life easier. After trekking for a while, especially on the way uphill, he found these things too heavy. He started to throw things away until only the eight essentials remained. He was on the way up a mountain, while the teacher was way ahead and had already passed that mountain. He was a city person and skilled in trekking. He fell down some slope and hurt his legs and gave up. His teacher, already past that mountain, sent someone to look for him, fearing that he had fallen off a cliff. He gave up, as it was very burdensome. Why was it so burdensome? Because he took so many possessions, he had to put much effort into climbing. All the stuff was already heavy as is. This is a physical example. When you're on a long journey, if you pack heavy, you can't go far. If you want to make a long journey to seek Dharma and have a lot of baggage, you won't go far. They weigh you down. So, you only need the essentials. But saving up is essential for lay people. Be prudent. Don't spend all you earn. That's not contentment. That's carelessness. Lay people must learn to plan, as no one will support us. Monks can go beg for food. Some days they get some, and other days they don't. But that's not possible for lay people. You must think about the future, but don't be blinded by wealth accumulation. Some bought many houses, thinking that they are assets, but they're expensive to maintain. House things break. Fixing them costs money. Having too many houses is troublesome. Be careful of what's not necessary. Think about the future and save up. This is enough. Don't make yourself a burden for other people. Don't say I'm not attached to anything while relying on others. That way, you are a burden to other people. So, let go of the excesses. Reduce or eliminate them, so you'll become lightweight. The excesses can be given away to those in need. It's practicing generosity and giving which makes yourself light. Then practice to reduce selfishness. You don't have to own more than others. Just having enough in the present and the future is sufficient. Some rich people don't know how to stop. They work hard to earn money all their lives. They never get to spend it. They start to spend when they get old. How do they spend it? From medical services. Doctors take much of your savings during the late stage of your life. So, be prudent in living, and the extra baggage in your mind will be reduced. Being loyal to your partner reduces restlessness and burden. If you have more than one partner, life will be hectic. So, the Buddha taught us about being content with what you have. There's being content with one's partner. One is enough. There's no need for many. Life will be comfortable, not having to satisfy many people. Family life will be peaceful and happy. If you practice and are peaceful outside of your family circle, but furious inside, there's something wrong. I know a woman who's a social enterprise worker, helping underprivileged or troubled children. She gave good advice and helped many children, but she became stressed. She's listening to other people's problems all day long. So, she vented out her stress at her kids and her husband. In the end, both the kids and the husband ended up leaving her. If you look good to other people, but are angry with your own family, this isn't good. You should practice at home. Invite other people in your family to practice. Make your home comfortable. It's okay that the outside is hot, but when you get home, you have a refuge. You can keep up with life this way. Animals leave their dwellings to fight to live. When they return to their dwellings in the evening, they're restful and peaceful. They're ready for tomorrow. There must be a place for you to stay away from the chaos and live in peace. If your home is emotionally blazing, there's nowhere else to go. Your life will be very difficult. So, keep the moral precepts and invite other members of the family to have moral precepts. Home will be peaceful. Once your home is peaceful, you don't want to wander off, because staying home is comfortable. You cannot ask divine beings to bless you with this. You must build it yourself. So, you must first practice until your mind is peaceful. Once your mind is peaceful, others who are around you will become peaceful. The entire home will then be peaceful and happy. I practiced like that when I was a layperson. My home was peaceful. At the office, people saw my peacefulness. So, they asked why I looked happy. I told them I practiced, so they got interested in practicing. There's no need to urge someone to practice. When people see that you're peaceful, they'll want to practice. My teaching until today had started from this small starting point. I practiced until I was peaceful. Other family members and co-workers became peaceful. The peacefulness started to spread out. At first, the teaching circle was small. I didn't intend to make it large. But in 1984, Luangpo Phut asked me to spread the teaching out more. He said there would be many people of my temperament in the future. Not hearing the Dharma would be their loss. So, at first I did it discreetly. I wrote an article and sent it to a magazine with a pen name. I also asked that the compensation for my writing be donated, and I didn't send them my address. That's how it started. Later, I started writing on the internet. After a while, I got to know a lot of people. Some helped me by scheduling people to meet me in small groups. The knowledge then started to spread. At first, people who frequent the internet came. They're so opinionated, so only a few of them could practice well. Others were too restless and unfocused and couldn't continue. The more recent generation is much more dedicated than the earlier. People who came recently were more determined. Today, my teaching has reached hundreds of thousands of people. So, peacefulness spreads. When an individual becomes peaceful, their home starts to become peaceful, and this peacefulness spreads out. I don't want to be famous or be anything. I do it because it is a Buddhist duty. The Buddha taught us to help ourselves and help others when appropriate. Help with mindfulness. Develop yourself and help others develop as you see fit. This is the Buddha's assignment to all the monks: practice oneself well and then help others practice. Older generation teachers since Luang Pu Mun developed themselves and then started to teach. This is still ongoing today. I've learned from the more senior masters from Luang Pu Mun's lineage, but my presentation is different. My presentation is geared more towards city people. In the old days, the masters used samadhi as a tool to develop wisdom. Today, it is not easy to do. People have short attention spans. The practice that's appropriate for people with short attention spans and very opinionated is to observe the mind. Luang Pu Dun told me that the practice of observing the mind will be popular in the urban environment. Back then, I felt that his prediction wasn't going to be accurate. But days have passed and the society has transformed into mostly urban life. Even in the rural areas, the societal construct is urban-like. The agricultural sector has turned into agricultural businesses. Society and economy have changed. Politics have become shaky. Things rise and fall. We go through peaceful and chaotic times. This is normal. People of this generation are very opinionated. If you're opinionated, your mind is never peaceful. So, the right practice isn't starting from doing a sitting meditation until you attain peacefulness. In the old days, masters would teach students to silently recite Put Toh 4 years as the only practice. Students back then didn't think about why. They followed the teaching with strong determination. If their minds weren't calm and peaceful, they intensify their practices. If one was afraid of ghosts, one went to practice in the cemetery. If one was afraid of tigers, one went to practice in the forests. They stayed in caves. Whatever they're fearful of, whether it's snakes, tigers, elephants, they went to practice there. Many have died, but not because of tigers or elephants, but because of malaria. The ones who met tigers or elephants were mostly fine. This was so because with a calm mind, one isn't fearful, and predators can sense this. They attack the ones who are fearful of them and stay away from the strong ones. Since these people had strong minds, they could survive. You can read the biography of Luang Pu Chob. I have met and paid respect to him. He's amazing. His ability to read minds was very quick. One time in Bangkok, he was surrounded by many monks and lay people. I couldn't reach him, but I saw a small opening that I could look through. I saw him lying down with his back facing me. I made a lotus shape with my hands and said in my mind, I ask for permission to pay respect to the fully enlightened one. Once I said this in my mind, He turned around and acknowledged me by nodding, and he turned back. His mind was very quick. The Wongpu Chob attained deep absorption when he met a tiger. He liked to do pilgrimage walks during the night, when predators go hunting. He was carrying a monk's lantern made of clothes. The light source was a candle. He was walking in the forest when he met a tiger. At first, he was frightened, but with a well-trained mind, he started silently reciting Put Toh repeatedly. The mind then entered a deep absorption. His body, the tiger, and the forest then disappeared from his mind's perception. There was nothing. His mind left the absorption the next morning. He then felt grateful for the tiger's appearance. Tiger the teacher taught him the mind's deep absorption well. He then tried to look for this tiger to give thanks, but he couldn't find it. The older generations fought the mind's impurities that way. For our generation, there's no longer such a place. Forests become national parks for putting up tents and playing guitar. They no longer are peaceful places. So, we make our home peaceful for practice instead. The practice that's suitable for us is to observe our own minds. There are some prerequisites for practicing observing the mind. Tame your greediness. If you have insatiable hunger, life is tiring and hectic. The mind won't be peaceful. Be content with what you have. Give the best for your work and be content with the results. Having 2 to 3 sets of clothes is enough. When I was working, I only had 2 to 3 sets of clothes. They're enough. There's no need to be complicated. I bought 2 sets of clothes a year. It was comforting. Acquire less. Be content. Seek quietness. The word viveg or seclusion is hard to translate. There are physical seclusion, mental seclusion, and defilement seclusion. Parting or even joining in merit-making ceremonies is not physical seclusion. So, you need to have physical seclusion and detach from the chaos and your companions. This path is the path to be walked alone. It is called Agyanamatka, which means the path that one walks alone, and one needs to walk only once. There's no turning back. Agyanamatka can be translated in many ways. Another is this is the path of the one, which is Buddha. So, we must have vivek. Be pleased with seclusion. Chaos doesn't work. Getting into a group to make merits at 100 temples won't lead you to any dharma. It is giving, which makes you feel happy. But if you want dharma, you need all morality, concentration, and wisdom. Giving only helps in the beginning. It teaches you to acquire less and be content. But if giving comes with mingling, it is not good enough. Mental seclusion is the daily seclusion to formally practice. Let the mind be calm from impurities and sensory excitations. The mind will then learn to develop wisdom to attain defilement seclusion, which is seclusion from the mind's impurities. Viveg means seclusion, not peacefulness. It is hard to talk about viveg to people today because they never experience it. In summary, give yourself more time. Don't mingle. Then seek seclusion. Acquire less. Be content. Take interest in peacefulness. Resolve to practice diligently. For people who practice, there is a test to see whether you should call yourself an apprentice. The easiest way is to observe yourself when you get up. When you wake up, do you think about how you should practice today? I was like that when I was still a layperson. I woke up and the first thought was how should I practice today? The mind was struggling to find a way that was not practicing, but the mind that seeks liberation will continuously think about how to practice, how to reduce unwholesomeness, and how to develop wholesomeness. The mind is determined to practice diligently. When you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes, practice. When riding on or waiting for a bus, practice. I was riding a bus to my government job. I didn't have much money. I was a commoner. I practiced while waiting for a bus. I breathed in silently reciting put and breathed out reciting toe. When the mind got anxious while waiting for a bus, I knew that restlessness had arisen, stayed, and decayed. When I could get on a bus, I was happy. I knew so. Happiness didn't last long, because the bus was so packed and uncomfortable, and my mind became unhappy. When I finally got a seat, a monk got on the bus. I felt that that monk was the enemy of my happiness by having to give up the seat for him. So, right now, I don't dare to get on a bus, as the unwholesomeness of my stinginess may yield results. People don't give up seats for monks anymore, right? I see photos taken from inside the SkyTrain showing monks standing while the lay people are sitting. You can practice anytime, anywhere, in any situation. When I was working, like organizing a meeting, after I had finished all preparation, while waiting for the committee to arrive, I practiced without closing my eyes. If I closed my eyes, people might have thought I was nuts, because we live in a society full of crazy people. If we don't adapt, they'll say we're crazy. People in this world are crazy because they're always distracted and fully immersed in worldly thoughts all the time. If I had shown behaviors that others viewed as abnormal, life would have been hectic. At least I had to keep answering questions about my abnormal behaviors. So, I tried to blend in. Practicing is the mind's work. Who else would know but yourself? Older masters taught their monk students that, after lunch, don't go into the abode. They'll fall asleep. Practice by walking. After my breakfast, I couldn't nap. There was so much work. But during lunch break, there's some free time. If I practiced formally by walking, it'd have drawn attention. So, I walked from my office to nearby temples. There's Wat Son Manat on one side and Wat Benjamab Orpit on the other. I went to these two temples because I could make round trips in time. Walking there was my formal meditation. I walked with mindfulness. I got there and walked back. If the mind was so unfocused, I observed my body and saw that the mind was the observer. When the mind gained some strength, I could observe the workings of the mind. I could see the subjects of thought that brought up happiness or unhappiness. I could see that different sounds brought up happiness or unhappiness. This was the practice. People ask where I disappeared to every day after lunch. I told them I went to these temples. Why, they asked. I said I went to pay respect to the Buddha. I really did it in front of the chapel. People then felt like, oh, this guy really loves to pay respect to the Buddha. This was still acceptable to them, but if they knew I liked to practice, they'd have thought that I was crazy. So, blend in. As an apprentice, you must be able to practice in all kinds of environments. You remain mindful of the body and the mind. This is the resolution to be diligent. Whenever you have time, at any time of the day, practice. Next, you need to keep up morality. You must keep the precepts clean. If they're tainted, it's very hard to develop yourself. If you practice samadhi without morality, your samadhi will deteriorate quickly. Can an immoral person practice samadhi? Yes, it's possible, but that samadhi will be wrong samadhi and will decay quickly. It will develop and cease. Someone like Devadatta was exceptional. He had accumulated a lot of good qualities and merits, and one day will become a solitary Buddha. This is very exceptional. But he was very jealous of the Buddha, and this jealousy was the one that drove him into animosity with the Buddha before his enlightenment repeatedly. At first, Devadatta's mind had superhuman abilities, good samadhi, and could perform miracles. But after many unwholesome actions, his samadhi deteriorated. Why did it deteriorate? Because when he observed his own mind, it was full of rage. How can samadhi stay? Samadhi won't coexist with a tainted, furious mind. Good samadhi will soon decay, until you have none. So, moral precepts are necessary if you want to practice further. The essentials for our practice are wanting less, contentment, desire for seclusion, solitariness, and resolution to practice. You need to develop these qualities, then you practice your mind. Keep the moral precepts clean. An easy way to keep them clean is to observe your mind. People violate moral precepts because their minds are overcome by impurities. If the impurities don't overcome your mind, you won't violate any moral precept. When anger overcomes your mind, you get into a brawl. You can destroy other people's properties or cause a riot. You can seduce your enemy's loved ones just to hurt them. You can also be verbally abusive. The moral precepts are destroyed by your anger. They can also be destroyed by desire. When you're overcome by desire, you can rob and kill, and violate two precepts at the same time. Desire can lead you to commit sexual misconduct. You can cheat and mislead when the mind is overcome by desire or delusion, is not knowing what's right and what's wrong. Moha can lead you to violate every precept. Any type of impurity desire can lead to violation of any precept. Tosa can lead to violation of any precept. Moha can lead to violation of any precept. If you're regularly mindful, when desire arises, you know so. When anger arises, you know so. When delusion arises, you know so when you're regularly mindful, desire, anger, and delusion cannot take over the mind. When they can't take over the mind, there is no drive for you to violate any precept, there's no impurity behind your thoughts. So, your speech is pure. Your actions are pure. So, be mindful to observe the mind, and morality will arise automatically. Be mindful as the mind becomes unfocused or depressed. Know so with impartiality. Or, if the mind has sensual desires and is full of greedy thoughts, know so. Hindrances will subside. There are five hindrances: sensual desires, hostility, restlessness, anxiety, uncertainty about the three gems, and sloth lethargy. These hindrances ruin samadhi. If you're mindful, these hindrances can't stay. Hindrances are the middle level of impurity. When mindfulness arises, impurities cease and the mind will have samadhi automatically. I didn't make this up. It's in the scripture. I have also experimented with this. At first, I learned how to practice samadhi fully from the older masters. Then, I learned wisdom cultivation from Luang Pudun when he taught me to observe my mind. I found that observing the mind will yield both samadhi and wisdom. When you're observing your mind and see hindrances and other impurities arise, hindrances will cease and samadhi will rise. This fits in with Prajong's favorite topic, knowing the mind that wanders off. This principle applies here. The mind that wanders off to think has restlessness, and most of the time, it wanders off to think. When the mind is restless and wanders off, know so. The wandering will cease and peacefulness will arise. It's like when a fire is lit, darkness disappears. We don't chase away the darkness. When we light something up, darkness disappears. The same applies to our mind. When the mind wanders off, it is full of delusion. It is dark and blurry. All impurities are dark and blurry. When you're mindful of moha's presence, moha will cease and the mind will light up and become the knower, the awakened, and the blissful. So, there are many ways to practice samadhi besides observing the breathing. Is it wrong to follow a strict formula? No, but it is hard for this generation of people. There's a discourse called Samanopal Asadtar, where the Buddha taught King Achyutsatru. Achyutsatru was a king, so he had a busy schedule and a busy mind. The Buddha didn't teach Achyutsatru to observe breathing. He taught Achyutsatru to observe the mind. Once you're mindful, your mind will be peaceful and samadhi will arise. This is so because the mind's restlessness is impure. When you're mindful, impurity ceases and stability rises. So, there are many ways to practice samadhi besides formally practicing. Observing the mind can result in samadhi. Some people will sometimes see this. When you're observing mental phenomena rising and ceasing, sometimes the mind suddenly pauses for a little moment. Then, happiness arises in your mind. That's when the mind switches to practice peacefulness and you've attained samadhi. This samadhi is happy and gentle. This happiness is gentler than when you enter the first jhana. In the first or second jhana, joy is a strong disturbance. But when you observe the mind and happiness arises, it is gentler. Once the mind gets enough rest, it continues to cultivate wisdom. It won't stop forever. It will keep changing. When happiness, sadness, wholesomeness, or unwholesomeness arises, you know so. So, you keep the precepts by having mindfulness. With it, your moral precepts will be clean. With mindfulness, you'll have samadhi. After that, use mindfulness to observe the body and the mind regularly. Once the mind is upright, the mind observes the body without any intention. The mind does so automatically. Wisdom then arises. The mind sees that the body isn't self. The mind will see three characteristics of the body. The mind will see the dominant characteristics of the body, inherent suffering and non-self. Sometimes, when the mind is upright and mindful, it observes the working of the mind. The mind sees itself wandering to eyes, ears, nose, tongue, or the body, and the mind knows so. Sometimes the mind sees the mental compositions that arise, like happiness, unhappiness, wholesomeness, or unwholesomeness. With mindfulness, the mind will see that these mental compositions are impermanent and non-self. Their coming and going are beyond your control or your choice. The mind that wanders to all the senses is also beyond your control and is impermanent. If the mind sees a vision, it does so temporarily, and the mind switches to observe another object quickly. Sometimes the mind focuses on the ears or the nose. This shows the mind's impermanence, and so does seeing happiness, unhappiness, wholesomeness, or unwholesomeness. If you can observe that the mind gets happy, unhappy, wholesome, or unwholesome without your control, you see non-self. If you see that the mind switches its focus to different senses like eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, or the mind itself without your control or your choosing, you also see non-self. When observing the mind, you can see to different kinds of its action. One is observing the feelings that arise, and the other is observing the mind's behavior of focusing on different senses. You'll see from your observation that all phenomena are impermanent. Happiness, unhappiness are impermanent. Wholesomeness and unwholesomeness are impermanent. So are the minds that arise to perceive different senses. You see the impermanence and non-selfness. They are not in your control. This is how wisdom arises from mindfulness. But mindfulness alone won't lead to wisdom. Observe the mind's impurities and samadhi will rise. The mind will be stable and luminous. With samadhi, wisdom will arise with mindfulness. So, the prerequisite for wisdom is samadhi. The Buddha said right concentration is the immediate cause of wisdom. Right concentration is samadhi with mindfulness. Wrong concentration is without mindfulness. It is either a dumb peacefulness or the mind's wandering to see something else besides the present, like the past, the future, or ghosts. It leads the mind to see many things except the body and the mind. That kind of samadhi is not stable on its base and is useless. So, can you see the important qualities that you need to develop? You must develop morality, concentration, and wisdom. These three arise when you have mindfulness. So the Buddha said practicing mindfulness is the only way to purity. I just explained why. With mindfulness, morality, concentration, and wisdom will develop. Once these three are full, enlightenment will happen. So, there are 10 qualities. The first 5 are acquiring less, being content, seeking quietness, seclusion, and resolution to practice. The next 3 are moral precepts, stability, and wisdom. The last 2 are liberation, enlightenment and its fruit, and wisdom about enlightenment. Vimut dhyan tadzana isn't seeing supernatural things. That is restlessness. It is the mind evaluating itself right after enlightenment to see which impurities the enlightenment process has eradicated. How many fetters have been eradicated and how many are left? After the final enlightenment, the mind will see that the mind is pure. There is no seed or dust of impurity left. The mind evaluates itself and the whole practice to see whether there is any impurity left. Everyone has to evaluate oneself. Don't let others evaluate you. It's unreliable. You have to evaluate yourself. For these 10 qualities, the first 5 are for making one's life conducive to developing morality, concentration, and wisdom. Morality, concentration, and wisdom will develop when you practice mindfulness. So, develop them by practicing foundations of mindfulness. Once morality, concentration, and wisdom are sufficient, enlightenment will result. Liberation will result. Wisdom about liberation will result as a bonus. These are the 10 qualities that you must develop. Develop the first 5 and don't give up, then have mindfulness. Your moral precepts, stability, and wisdom will develop. Guard your mind with mindfulness. So, can you practice just one thing? Yes, you can. Guard your mind with mindfulness. This single practice can lead you to liberation. The teachings are vast because people are very different, but if you want to summarize into one practice, it is guarding your mind by having mindfulness. Guarding your mind isn't really guarding. It is the duty of mindfulness to guard the mind. You don't guard the mind. You observe the mind as it is, but observe regularly and frequently. Mindfulness is the one that knows what's happening in the mind. If you practice it often, mindfulness will be strong, quick, and clear. This leads to the development of moral precepts, stability, and wisdom. How can this happen? If you have mindfulness observing your mind regularly, unwholesomeness cannot arise. When you're mindful, wholesomeness has already arisen. This wholesomeness will develop into moral precepts, stability, and wisdom, and eventually liberation. Liberation is above worldly wholesomeness and is called transcendent wholesomeness. This requires practicing mindfulness. To practice mindfulness, I recommend you to observe your own mind. This is the quickest way. Can you practice by observing the body? Yes, but why do you practice observing the body? You do it so that one day you can observe your mind. If you already can observe your mind, there's no need to waste time. Today's lecture is thorough. It's up to you whether you'll practice. Can you acquire less, or do you still want to acquire more? Do you want a newer model of smartphone than the one you currently have? What if the new model explodes when it becomes fully charged? It's a waste of time. How do you actually use your phone? If you use it to conduct your business, it's okay to have a good model. But if you only use it to call other people, get on social media, or use it as an alarm clock, there's no need to overspend on the latest model. Learn to acquire less. Learn to be content. Being content means knowing whether what you currently have is sufficient. If it is, there's no need to acquire more. It's wasteful spending. Don't be totally immersed in worldly business. Seek peacefulness inside. Seek seclusion. Think about practice. Remind yourself every day that life is short. If you don't practice today, when will you? If you wait until you're old, you won't have enough strength to practice. Keep reminding yourself and be observant of your own mind. It's easy. That's it for today. The teaching today is easy. I'm adjusting. I used to think Prajan was the one who made my teaching difficult. Today, he's sitting at the same place. Today, I see my own flaw of blaming others. This is a bad example. By the way, this is a joke. Do you get it? Next is homework submission time.
Question 1. I practice by silently chanting and observing my mind. The impurities that I frequently see are restlessness, desire, and anger. Please advise on how to improve.
Can you see that you're not just observing your mind? You're altering it to be still. The mind is a bit dull and still. You must get past this. You must see that this is a fabrication. You're doing this all day. This is a good fabrication, which is usually self-torture, while bad fabrications are usually sensual overindulgence. So, if you practice and find your mind dull, it's a good fabrication. It's a form of self-torture and self-control. Know so. This isn't the way. Know that this is a fabrication. Fabrication and composition is a big topic. You should know them. Nibbana has no fabrication. Nibbana has no desire. It is called viraga when desires cease, so do compositions. Nibbana is also called visankara when the mind's fabrication ceases. The mind sees Nibbana. That's enlightenment, also called vimutti. So, know the fabrications. Apprentices usually compose good things. Know so. Whatever the composition is, it's still a composition. When there's composition, there's suffering. But you suffer like a good person does. Don't you find a regularly dull and still mind suffering. It is. Student number one, here's your summary. You practice well. The aggregates are separated. The only remaining weakness is the dullness and stillness. Other aspects of your practice have much improved.
Question 2. I formally practice by doing sitting meditation and observing my breathing. In daily life, I observe the mind that wanders off to think. During the sitting meditation, when I know that the mind wanders off to think, I want to be wholesome, and the mind loses its neutrality. I see that that mind has aversion and causes me a lot of suffering. When desires arise, I see that the mind is suffering and I want to eradicate it, but I know I still can't do so. But at least, I could practice right mindfulness and right stability. Please advise.
Suffering isn't to be eradicated. Suffering is for knowing. The one to eradicate is the cause of suffering, which is a desire to be good, to be free from suffering, to be enlightened. Know so. Eradicate it. For suffering, know it and don't deny it. Know the suffering. Eradicate the cause of suffering. Ah, this is correct. Now, it is incorrect. Now, it is correct again. Can you see that there's just a slight difference? When you're mindful, it's good. But when you become deluded by any fabrication, no matter how sophisticated it is still a delusion. Now, your mind wanders off to think. Do you know so? Don't seek. Don't be deluded into seeking. Keep breathing. Don't bend the mind like that. Can you see that when you bend the mind like that, delusion and dullness enter the mind? The mind becomes hazy. Use a normal mind to meditate. Yes, like this. Student number two, you're skillful in samadhi, which is good. But your weakness is, once you enter samadhi, your mindfulness is too weak, and delusion can creep in. When you leave samadhi, your mind will be a bit blurry and disoriented. This is a byproduct of entering samadhi, while delusion is creeping in. Have mindfulness. Focus on having mindfulness, not peacefulness.
Question 3. In daily life, I'm mindful of the body. I see the body as non-self. During formal practice, I observe the body and the mind working. I see them as suffering. I see my mind trying to be neutral and trying to let go, but the mind still clings on. I see everything rises and ceases. I see that some external things can creep in, but I don't pay attention to them. Am I on the right path?
Yes, you are, but observe naturally. Keep observing. Letting go is the duty of wisdom. You observe the truth of the body and mind. Once the mind sees the truth, the mind will let go by itself. Don't try to let go of anything. Keep good moral precepts. Now, your mind has just wandered off. Come back to observe the body. Don't let the mind wander outside. Breathe heavily. This lets the mind come back. Yes, like this. But don't force the mind not to wander off. Let the mind observe the body and mind. When happiness, sadness, wholesomeness, or unwholesomeness arises, know so. When you can't observe the mind, observe the body. See the body sitting or breathing. Now the mind got immersed into observing the body. This isn't good. Just observe. Just know of the body's existence and its movements. Just know the existence of the mind. Just know the ever-changing nature of the mind. Just feel. Don't over-focus or fixate on it. Student number two is good at samadhi. Student number two is okay. Student number three. This is a delusion. Your mind has just wandered off. Smile sweetly. You practice until you're stressed, which isn't good. Ah, the good mind is here. No, it's bad again. The mind is occasionally good. Don't try to make it good. We're not practicing for a wholesome, happy, or peaceful mind. These qualities are extras. We practice knowing the body and the mind. All other good qualities will automatically arise. Student number 3. Practice more. Do it patiently. Keep observing the mind. Your practice is okay. Everyone's practice is okay. Student number 3. You got a lot better. Your aggregates are separated.
Question 4. I meditate by observing my breathing. I still feel sleepy and restless. During the day, I use observing my body and breathing as my home base. On some days, I see myself as another person who isn't very loving, full of anger and irritability. On some days, I'm addicted to peacefulness. I'm too bored with the world to conduct my business. Please give advice that's appropriate for me.
Practicing doesn't make you lazy about working. Laziness is an impurity. You have a duty to make a good living. But after work hours, practice, or during daily small breaks, practice. If the practice makes you lazy and you want to be taken care of by monks, then your practice isn't proper. Monks hardly get by these days, and they can hardly take care of others. Keep observing. Live a worldly life. Doing so will lead you to see a lot of suffering. When you live a worldly life and see suffering, know so. If you're uncomfortable and want to run away, know so. When you say you're full of anger, it stems from this. The mind is bored with this, so aversion arises frequently. Know so. If the mind is impartial and hates it, know so. Be patient. Don't run away from the world when you practice. You can't run away from it. Where can you run to? Anywhere you go is the world. A temple is a world and isn't any less chaotic than outside. Student number 5 is good. You're disciplined in your practice.
Question 5. I formally practice by being mindful of my breathing in the beginning, and then I know the mind's fabrications. If the mind gets careless and becomes impartial, I know as much as I can. The mind will be awake and blissful, and the aggregates will separate. During the day, I practice formally for many short periods of time to sharpen my skills. I start to be able to observe the rising and ceasing of my mind and other phenomena. Please advise.
There's no need for more advice. Practice more. You're doing well. Do more. Right now, you're over-focusing. Student number 5. This isn't good. It's too tight and controlling. Can you see the tightness? If you practice correctly, and the mind has the right samadhi, it will be light, soft, and gentle. If it's stiff, something's wrong. You're too controlling and over-focusing. Just observe the body and the mind. Now, you're trying to fabricate softness and gentleness. Don't do it. Don't fake stiffness or softness. Know the mind as it is. Be honest with yourself.
Question 6. I have more equanimity towards various phenomena. I use my body as the home base for practice. During the day, I see my mind wandering off and see phenomena arising in my chest. For my formal practice, I use breathing. After the mind attains some peacefulness, I observe the elasticity, tension, pulling, and tingling feeling that appears on my face. I don't know whether this is considered contemplating three characteristics.
If you can observe the mind, do so. But if you can't, observe the tension or whatever is happening on your face. Just observe it. This follows the principle of, if you can observe the mind, do so. If you cannot, observe the body. You can see that different parts of the body are changing. It's good to observe the body because your mind won't wander off to somewhere else. But once your mind has gained strength, it'll start to observe the mind. Impurities are not in the body, they are in the mind, and so are wholesomeness and enlightenment. When you cannot observe the mind, observing the body is correct.
Question 7. I see the mind being afraid of how it can exist without holding on to anything. My mind is addicted to impurities. It likes to whine and gets irritated easily. When I do a sitting meditation, my restlessness leads to mental visions. I'm doubtful about my practice. I want to make progress. I feel exasperated towards the mind's impurities, both inside and outside. I see the world as empty. It's just a stream of impurities flowing. I'm not sure whether my exasperation is real or whether it is just aversion.
It is an aversion. You still don't really see it. You need to practice more. Can you tell that if you're truly exasperated, the mind will let go of whatever it has or it is? But if it's aversion, the mind will push something away and will crave another thing. It'll crave happiness or peacefulness, and it'll hate suffering and restlessness. If detachment really happens, nothing will be picked up again. Practice patiently. Your mind is still restless. Can you see it? Let the mind stay with its practice object. When the mind wanders off, know so. Keep doing this. Don't be impatient. Student number 7, you were impatient. You skipped to wisdom development too quickly. Develop the mind to be more stable before continuing practicing. Right now, your mind isn't stable on its base. Can you see this? The mind is outside. If the mind is outside, wisdom development can't really happen, as thinking will occur instead. So, breathe. Breathe and know that the mind is outside. Just breathe and don't try to reel the mind in. Don't alter the mind. It's outside. Keep breathing. Can you see the mind starting to come closer to its base? So, keep practicing. If the mind is outside, know so. Don't reel it in. Keep practicing and your samadhi will be strong. What you're practicing is okay, but you need stronger samadhi. It'll lead you to swift wisdom development.
Question 8. I chant in the morning and the evening. I practice sitting meditation 3 to 4 times a day. I see my change. I see my impurities and past deeds. I used to think I was a good person, but now I see that I'm not as good as I thought. The mind wanders less and isn't so restless. Sometimes I catch the mind before it starts wandering off. When I have some problems, I find answers in your YouTube videos. Can you tell whether my samadhi is sufficient to separate the aggregates?
You can. Separating the aggregates isn't difficult. You can do it even right now. Can you see that the body is sitting while the mind is the observer? The aggregates are separated. Show me how you leave samadhi. Leave. Can you leave it and be with the world? Okay, come out. Don't be lord inside. Come out. Can you see your mind's addiction to staying inside? It loves that. Your mind just got inside again. Come out. If you stay there, it won't see much suffering. come out. You go in there to rest just a bit. Once the mind has enough rest, come outside and let the mind be in contact with other objects. Observe the changes that occur in the mind. Ah, yes, practice samadhi at this level. Previously, your mind was totally absorbed and drowned in delusions. Yes, this is good. This is how you practice samadhi. Don't go get drowned inside like getting frozen in a freezer. That's it for today. Student number 5, you're exhausted. You tightened up in front of the camera. You all may leave.